welcome to VBAC Birth Stories, a podcast where Australians share their journey to a vaginal birth after cesarean.
We are a safe haven for women to share their own VBAC journeys and through these personal experiences, educate and empower listeners.
I'm your host, Mel.
And I'm your host, Steph. And this is VBAC Birth Stories.
Today, Mel and I are bringing you three birth stories from Amy Singh. After commencing her career in environmental science, Amy found her true calling in birth advocacy. She's now the coordinator of Home Birth New South Wales and Home Birth Australia. She's also the co-founder of the Home Birth Consortium Australia, a doula and breastfeeding counsellor. Amy's primary cesarean was due to placental abruption. She then planned her VBAC as a home birth and went on to birth her third baby at home also. I asked Amy what she'd like listeners to take away from this episode, and she said she wants you to remember that you always have a choice. So the power and the decisions are always in your hands. Do your research, make informed decisions, and seek out the people you need to feel safe, held, and supported. Birth can be so hard, but it also holds the potential to be the most empowering, transformative, and incredible experience you'll ever have. And the right support goes a long way towards achieving that. There's a slight language warning and a trigger warning for pregnancy loss and miscarriage. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Thanks so much, Amy, for coming on the show today to share your VBAC experiences with us. We'd like to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So thank you so much for the invitation. I'm really excited to share my stories. Yeah, I love talking about birth. It's my passion. So, a little bit about me. I am previously a lecturer at a university, and I did a lot to do with plant physiology. And so I was a researcher and a lecturer, and that sort of drove me into, I suppose, being very interested in reading research. And so then when I was having my own babies, I did a lot of research and just sort of fell in love with birth. And so I am now not only have that background, and I'm a mother, obviously, but I'm also a doula and birth educator. I'm a breastfeeding counsellor, and I also coordinate Home Birth New South Wales, Home Birth Australia, and I'm a co-coordinator of Home Birth Consortium Australia. And yeah, I sit on multiple committees as well. So Maternity Choices Australia and Doula Network Australia too. Yeah, so I suppose that's a little bit about me. And yeah, my main profession is as a doula.
Your situation is quite unique because before you fell pregnant with Willow, you had come to the decision to home birth.
Yes. My background in birth was very much, I suppose, medically led. There wasn't anything to sort of indicate that I should ever consider home birth. My main experience of birth was through watching my mum give birth to my baby brother. I didn't actually watch her give birth, but being involved in the process of her pregnancy, and then, you know, she went away, gave birth, and came back. And I was 8 when he was born, and it was quite fast and furious. And I remember just going to the hospital to see her afterwards and being like, oh my gosh, you look wrecked, like so tired. And, you know, she didn't have wonderful things to say about birth. So that was my introduction to birth. Then I fell pregnant when I was, we'd been married almost a year, or maybe half a year actually, and started sort of looking into my options. And I had a friend that had several babies of her own at that point. She had 3 children and she had home birthed them all. And I remember saying to her, I think you're insane. Why would you choose that option? Like, where are the benefits to that? And she gave me this book called Gentle Birth, Gentle Mothering by Sarah Buckley. And she was like, just read it and see what you think. And so I started reading that book and my mind just was blown, and I fell in love with birth, and I fell in love with natural birth and this idea that, you know, my body was actually built to do this and I didn't have to be so reliant on all of the medical technology that it seemed like I would need to be able to give birth to my baby safely. And so I say that that book opened the door to a whole different world. I sort of went down the rabbit hole at that point and started researching all of my decisions, both through, you know, reading and speaking to other women and health professionals, and also reading the scientific literature. So that was my first pregnancy, but I then miscarried at 12 weeks. And so by that point, I had actually employed a midwife, and she was an incredible support through that time. But it really drove home to me how much that option, that model of care, was what I wanted for subsequent pregnancies, because she was incredible. I ended up having to go to the hospital because the baby didn't come away entirely on its own. So I had what they term retained products of conception. And it's such a ridiculous term. But anyway, it was still hanging in there. And so I had to go to the hospital and stay overnight for one night. And the care I got in the hospital was actually really, it was really good, but it just wasn't personal at all. I didn't know the people that were stuffing their hands into my vagina. I didn't know any of the people that came around to test my blood pressure, and I had horrible hospital food, and it was just sort of, you know, it wasn't the experience that I wanted, particularly after just giving birth to a baby, my first baby. So that was where I went and started on my home birth journey, all because of one incredible friend and a little book.
Sorry, I just wanted to go back there. So when you got to the hospital, did you actually have to go through a birth, or were you given a D&C?
No, I didn't have to have a D&C. Thankfully, I just needed a little bit of nudging to get everything away. Yep. Mm.
And so did that experience shape your mindset going into subsequent pregnancies?
Yeah, so I often say that that miscarriage, it totally took away my innocence about pregnancy. So my pregnancy with that first baby, we nicknamed the baby Tadpole, because that's what it was initially. And so with that pregnancy, I was so excited, and, you know, I didn't have any doubt in my mind that I was going to meet this little person one day, and I'm growing this little baby and it's so amazing. And then when I miscarried, I remember being like, oh my gosh, like this doesn't happen. This doesn't happen to me. Like, I'm healthy, I'm well, why would this happen? And then obviously, you know, one in four women, potentially even more, have miscarriages. So it was, yeah, it really sort of blew my mind that I didn't know anything about that. And in fact, my mum had had a miscarriage before each of her healthy babies. So, you know, there was that family history there as well that I had never known about. And it put a little bit of doubt in my body that, you know, oh, maybe I can't grow babies. Maybe it's not going to happen for me.
Do you want to take us through to Willow's pregnancy now?
Yeah, of course. So, I fell pregnant with Willow soon after I had the miscarriage. We were very fortunate. We fell pregnant with her and with our miscarried baby very quickly. And so it was very consciously planned and conceived. But yeah, I fell pregnant and I was simultaneously so excited again and then absolutely terrified, just riddled with anxiety. It wasn't the same as the first pregnancy. I actually just counted down the minutes until I got to 12 weeks. And at 7 weeks, I had some spotting and that really threw me for six. I remember being like, oh no, it's happening again. And so I basically just turned into like a couch lizard and did not get up. I was like, if I stay horizontal, maybe the baby will stay in. And we were on holidays, so that just looked like me sitting in a tent for 2 weeks. When I got back home, I saw a herbalist and she gave me some herbs to use and suggested some like compresses to put on my tummy. And I was doing that. And then at 9 weeks, I had an enormous bleed. Like, I'm talking, you know, more than I had ever had with any period or anything. I really freaked out then. And it actually happened at one of my friend's 25th birthday party. I just ran to the toilets and there was just blood going everywhere. And one of my friends came in and was like, Amy, I saw some blood on the floor. Is that you? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, oh my gosh. I said, can you just get Justin? So then we're both in the toilet. And I remember saying to him, if this is happening again, if this is it, we're not having children. Like, we're just not doing it. And yeah, he said the same. He was like, yeah, okay. Like, I totally get it. I was just devastated. And then, you know, we went home and the bleeding settled and I started thinking, oh, maybe, like, maybe it wasn't. I still feel pregnant. And so I started researching it and I came to the conclusion that I had a what's called a subchorionic hematoma. And I do this. I come up with the reason before I go to a care provider and I tell them, I'm pretty sure this is what's wrong. Can I have a sniff?
I think that that's probably the researcher in you, though. That's probably the scientist in you, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I had decided was happening. And when I went and had a scan, and in the meantime, I should say, my mum was saying, look, you're just going to have a DNC. Like, just get it over with. You know, it's just another miscarriage. You can try again. It's going to be okay. And I was like, no, damn it. I don't think that this baby is leaving. Like, I have done everything I can to keep it and I'm pretty sure it's hanging in there. And so went and had an ultrasound at 9 weeks and lo and behold, there was the little flicker of her heartbeat. And I remember taking a photo and sending it to my mum, like, see, she's still in there. It's still in there. And at this point, I knew she was a girl. I had already bought like things that were girly for her. Like, I had bought little dresses and I remember my husband saying, what if this baby comes out and it's not a girl? And I was like, no, it is. Like, he's a girl. I know. And I'm pretty sure Tadpole was a boy. Yeah. So the 9 week scan, like, that really reassured me. It was just incredible to see a baby with a flicker and, you know, see them wriggling around. And I remember just bursting into tears and, you know, with relief that I hadn't lost this baby and I was right. It was a hematoma and the hematoma was actually really substantial. So it was quite amazing that the baby had hung in there actually. So yeah, that was an incredible relief, but also a bit like, is it still going to be okay? Is this going to cause problems? And so I did more researching and read little bits here and there about, oh, this can happen and that can happen. And I was like, okay, well, we're just not going to manifest that. I'm just going to focus on healthy pregnancy, healthy baby, and we'll see what happens. And yeah, the rest of my pregnancy was blissfully easy, totally beautiful. We heard the heartbeat at 12 weeks again with our midwife, Jo. And again, it was just so exciting. And I remember just feeling so, like, so beautifully, gloriously full of, like, love and life and just loving being pregnant. It was just incredible. And, yeah, 20 weeks rolled around and I had, like, a little bit of spotting around 20 weeks, but I thought that was because I had had sex the night before and sometimes that can happen. You can damage the cervix. So I wasn't too worried. And then at 36 weeks, I do this thing where I get really antsy towards the end of pregnancy and I have to do all of the things. And so for some women that presents as nesting, for me it often presents as exercise and nesting, but bizarrely exercise. Anyway, I hadn't been swimming in my entire pregnancy and I decided I was going to go swimming and I swam 2 kilometres, heavily pregnant at 36 weeks. And when I got home, I was like, I feel really refreshed, but I also felt a little bit like I did too much. Like, I'm a little bit sore. And so I went to bed early that night and then I started having like sort of cramping and stuff over the subsequent days. Lost my mucus plug the day after I went swimming and I was like, oh, this is really weird and this is too early. Like, I can't have a home birth if I go into labor, you know, right at the beginning of 36 weeks. So hold on in there. So I just stopped doing things, laid on the lounge, just started getting stuff ready for the baby. And then 36 plus 3 I was, my dog was acting really weird, like so weird. She's 14 years old at this point. She was just like really present and jumping on me and trying to, like, I don't know, basically get under my skin. It felt like she wanted to be that close. And I couldn't work out what was going on, but I just dismissed it as, you know, she's just being a bit odd. But anyway, that morning I went to bed and that morning at 2 a.m. I woke to dripping blood and was like, oh my gosh, what is going on? And, you know, because of the history of, like, blood means baby gone or potentially okay, but, you know, not a fantastic situation before you're in labor, I freaked out, understandably. And I rang my midwife and I remember her saying, well, what do you feel is the right thing to do? What's your body telling you? What do you feel? Because she said, you know, it's up to you what you do, but obviously she's recommending I head to a hospital, and I was like, no, I need to go and get this baby checked out. And so that's what we did. The drive to the hospital was excruciatingly long. I hadn't felt the baby move. I couldn't get her to move. I was drinking cold things, like prodding my belly. I was terrified that, you know, I'd lost this baby. Yeah, we got to the hospital. They put the CTG monitor on and she started kicking up a storm and was like, you know, get it off me. And I again just burst into tears. The obstetrician was called in because I was bleeding quite heavily. And when I had done my reading about subchorionic hematomas, one of the things that they can sometimes lead to, and I want to try to downplay this as much as possible because it's not in all cases. It's definitely not in the majority of cases. It's just in a very slight few. But sometimes it can lead to placental abruption. And being the researcher that I am, I had read all about this. And so I knew that that's what was happening. And so the obstetrician came in and looked with the ultrasound machine and was like, you know, the placenta's coming away. It's sitting in between your cervix and the baby's head. I now know that's not true, but he thought it was sitting between the cervix and the baby's head. And he just went super pale and was like, we've got to get this baby out right now. And I was like, yeah, okay. I said, I'm having a placental abruption. And he was quite shocked that I knew what that was. And he said, yeah. And I was like, okay. Yeah, so we need a cesarean, fair enough. And I remember calling my midwife and chatting through it with her and calling my mum and letting her know I was going in for a cesarean, and she was beside herself. You know, her baby going in for a freaking cesarean is really scary. And then I sat and just sort of sat with Juz while all of the operating stuff was being prepared. So like my hubby helped put the stockings and stuff on. They're awful. And you know, we just all got prepared for the surgery. And because it was quite early in the morning, the obstetrician had to call in additional support staff. So midwives, anaesthetist, the student obstetrician. And I remember Juz looking at me and being like, we're going home, aren't we? Like, we're going home and we're just going to have our baby at home. And I was like, no, babe, like we're having a cesarean. And I think it just, it like 3 a.m, he was woken up out of a sleep to be like, our plans are totally changing. And at that point I was okay because, you know, I had all the hormones going and everything. But I think for him it was quite a shock. And in some ways, because of the lack of support for men, particularly in the hospital system during birth scenarios, I think it was traumatic for him. Anyway, so they got us all ready. We went in. The cesarean was pretty well done, really. I mean, I hugged a midwife and used my birth breathing that I'd learned through like reading hypnobirth books and stuff to calm myself down for the spinal. And that was actually really effective. And I was quite shocked by that. And then I just laid there and I asked them if I could watch my baby being born. And they said that no, I couldn't. But before all of this, I had said, I will have skin to skin with my baby and I will breastfeed in recovery, or I'm not signing that paperwork. And they were like, okay, that's fine. And I had also asked for delayed cord clamping, but that was something that, you know, with a placental abruption, it's potentially not the best thing to be pushing for, but they were like, you know, we'll do what we can. So yeah, anyway, I wasn't able to watch her be born, but I felt when she was born. And I remember looking over to my husband, I felt like the weight come out of her and the movement. You know, you can't feel very much because of the spinal, but I felt the change in pressure. And I looked at my husband and I said, oh, she's here. Like, she's been born. We nicknamed her Hope while I was pregnant. And so I said, Hope is here. And he looked around and then, you know, she started screaming and they dried her off and then put her on my chest. And we had, she was wrapped in a blanket. I remember shaking and saying to Juz, just get the blanket off. Like, I can't do it. My hands are all tied up, and just get her skin to skin with me. And he did that. And as soon as she was there, it just felt like home. And I remember just bursting into tears. And I kept saying to her, oh, I'll never let you go again. And I said to her, oh, hi, Willow. And I remember my husband just looking at me like, did you just name our baby? And I said, yeah. He's like, that wasn't on the lists. And I said, no, but she is. She's a Willow. And yeah, it really feels like she chose her own name and just delivered it to us, to me, at the right time. And so Willow means flexible, determined, resilient, and they're all of the things that she is. She was determined to be here. She was flexible in the way that she was born. She was resilient. She survived the hematoma and a cesarean. Once we were in recovery, my husband was allowed to be there with me, which was awesome. And then I remember seeing my midwife, my private midwife, knocking on the doors, and she had this like look of just, you know, just worry, you know. So she was so worried, and she got in and helped me to try and breastfeed Barb. And she had difficulties latching because she was 36 and a bit weeks, but her breathing was fantastic. Her temperature regulation was fantastic. And we basically stayed skin to skin from the moment she was born for about 18 months, I think.
Oh.
And it was just so beautiful. And, you know, besides having the shakes in recovery and stuff, it was quite a successful cesarean, really. I think a massive part of that was the support and the knowledge I had surrounding, you know, what my rights were in the hospital system, what I could ask for, what I could demand. And it made a massive difference. And, you know, we had some crappy experiences in the hospital with the postnatal care. The cesarean itself was great. The postnatal care was a little bit cruddy, particularly around breastfeeding support. And the only way that I could get her to latch consistently, despite seeing lactation consultants, even privately employed ones, the only way we could get her to consistently feed was using a nipple shield. And so she fed with a nipple shield for 2.5 years. She did really well with that. She did get given formula in her first days. I remember coming out of the toilet to a midwife giving my baby formula that hadn't been agreed upon. That was, you know, that was sort of the last straw. And I just said, I'm leaving. And they tried to threaten me with docs and all sorts of things to stop me from discharging myself because, you know, baby still wasn't feeding effectively. So understandably, and I had refused to give her formula, and they wouldn't give her the donor milk that my doula had sourced for her. So I ended up saying, well, I'll discharge myself against medical advice. And so they agreed, but obviously said I had to come back a couple of days later for a weigh-in. So that was one of those things where I was just like feeding her around the clock, trying to get as much milk into her as possible. But I knew that being in the hospital system, in that environment where I was so stressed out and, you know, just every feed was watched by a midwife, and every feed before the feed, they would take her blood sugar levels. And it was just brutal, like her little bruised heels. Like, it was just so violating for this new precious baby that had just entered the world. And so, yeah, I really pushed to get out of there. And lo and behold, I walked in my front door and my bra popped off and the milk just flooded everywhere. Like, the milk was there. It just wasn't going to come in when I was in that stressful environment.
How many days were you in hospital, Amy?
2 and a bit days, I suppose. And
were they checking her blood sugar levels? Is that protocol for placental abruption?
It's a policy around premature babies.
Oh, of course.
And because she was 3 days early, they classed her as premature. It also meant that the amount of fluids that she was expected to be having and the amount of checking on feeds that they were doing was ramped up because she was classed as premature. The reality is she was not premature. She was early term. She didn't have any signs of prematurity besides, you know, not being able to latch as well as we needed her to. And part of that is because her mouth was so damn tiny. And I also now I know what I know, I do believe that she had oral restrictions, potentially a tongue tie and a lip tie that, you know, hadn't been picked up or dealt with, that I think could have made a big difference to her being able to latch. So yeah. That's her story up to that point. And she's now 6 and incredibly bright and wonderful and intuitive. And I absolutely adore her.
I was going to ask you actually, Amy, back to when you were, the moment you realized when they told you, well, you knew anyway that a cesarean was going to become a reality. How did you feel in that moment?
I was simultaneously relieved that, you know, baby was still alive and that a cesarean was going to happen to keep her that way, but also extremely devastated. I've been listening to this birth trauma podcast recently, and I don't actually hold any trauma. And I know that in this trauma podcast, the doctor that speaks about it, the psychologist, she says, you know, a lot of women don't say that they have trauma in the first instance, they'll call it something else, like it was a bad birth, I felt, you know, very upset, stuff like that. It's not until later down the track that they realize it was actually traumatic. But truly, even with all of this knowledge, even with having my other babies in very different ways, I don't hold any trauma from that birth, but I was incredibly disappointed. I was so excited to give birth. Like, I had totally prepped myself. I'd done everything right. My body was well aligned. I'd seen a chiropractor. I was seeing an acupuncturist. I was seeing a naturopath. I had all of the right food. I was taking all of the right supplements. Like, I felt like I had done everything I possibly could to optimize my body for this baby to be healthy and well. And I had prepared, you know, my birth space and my birth team according to, you know, a lot of research. So I knew I had done my absolute best. And, you know, it all just went to shit. And that really sucked. I was incredibly upset, disheartened and disappointed that I didn't get to experience the birth I wanted for me, but most of all for my baby. Like, I felt like this isn't an optimal way for my baby to be brought into the world. She's going to be compromised because of this. I just felt like I'd failed her, actually. And that was the hardest part. You know, brand new mum, I've already failed. So that was one of the really hard things that I had to process. And obviously I don't feel that way anymore. But initially it was, yeah, that was really hard.
Suppose when you were discharged from the hospital, did the doctors give you any recommendations for future pregnancies in terms of VBAC?
I remember the obstetrician, he was quite cocky. I first met him during my pregnancy because they have it's almost like a private obstetrician type of model of care at the hospital I was booked in at as my backup. And I remember saying to him, you know, these are the things I wanted. And he was like, oh, we do our best. I've never lost a mother yet. I'm not about to. And he repeated that when I was, you know, in hospital. So that was really kind of him. That's exactly the type of language that I avoided the hospital for in the first place. But he was really cocky. And I was really cocky too. And I remember saying to him, I'm not going to see you anyway. Doesn't matter. Ate my words there, didn't I? The obstetrician recommended that I definitely give birth in a hospital next time and that I would most likely need a cesarean. That's the very short and brief, curt answer. And obviously I wasn't super on board with that answer. I asked him what he thought of vaginal birth after cesarean. And he said, oh, you can try, but you can't try here because that hospital does not support VBAC, which, yeah, don't get me started on that. That's a whole other story entirely. But the risks around VBAC, they're heightened and people make a mountain out of a molehill with those risks. When I spoke with my midwife, she was like, yes, of course, you know, if you were to fall pregnant again, home birth could be an option for you. You need to see how the pregnancy progresses. You know, if you had any signs of any issues with placental abruption stuff again, obviously that would, you know, it would be safer for us to be in a hospital. But provided everything is going smoothly, you can have a VBAC at home. And I always knew that I wasn't going to just lie down and let someone cut me again. That's not me. And I wanted to experience birth. I just wanted to experience one contraction, actually. I had never had a contraction. And so that was my aim, really, for birth. If I can experience one contraction, I'll be happy. I also just really wanted to bring my baby into the world in a way that was beneficial for them as well. Like, I felt like a cesarean took away from what my baby could have had. And I understand women choose cesareans every day, and I'm not berating their choice. It's only my personal feeling that, you know, I just really wanted this for me and for my children based on the reading I had done.
I suppose telling anyone of your home birth plans, did you meet any kind of resistance there or prejudice towards that concept or idea?
Oh, yeah. So my mum was terrified. She was really, really concerned, and she wasn't coming at it from a place of like, you can't home birth because you're going to, you know, end up hurting the baby or anything like that. She was mainly just worried about me and what it would mean for me. I tried to sort of give her the information and the research and the resources to understand it and to feel confident. But the reality is, I don't think she really felt confident in it until I did birth my second baby at home. So that was really hard because I have a really good relationship with my mum. My mother-in-law felt the same, She was really concerned and brought it up fairly frequently, like, you know, are you sure you're going to do this? And she had really simple births. Her labors were like 2 and 5 hours, and she basically birthed the baby before she even got to the hospital. It was like in the hospital waiting room. So, you know, I was quite, I suppose, shocked that she would have that idea around it. But I suppose it's so ingrained in women in today's society that, well, you go to the hospital because that's where everyone goes and that's where it's safest. They were the two main ones. No one else really pushed back against it. And my hubby, he was unsure to begin with. And then when we met with our midwife, he was like, oh, yeah, she's got this. It's fine. We're all good. So, yeah, once he heard, you know, all of the equipment that she brings, all of the, you know, medical resus equipment, and, you know, she had everything, that was the first response that the hospital would have anyway for the vast majority of situations. So, yeah, he felt really confident after that. And these are medical professionals that are trained in natural physiological birth. None of the, you know, interventions that often lead us down that cascade of intervention pathway into needing more interventions are presented in that home environment. You're not inducing women. You're not giving them epidurals. You're not doing anything to interfere with the natural physiological process ahead of time. And so that keeps it safe to happen at home. If you were inducing someone, you wouldn't do it at home. And so these sorts of things, that's how we keep home birth safe. And I think making sure that people recognize that there is a vast difference between free birth, which is birth without a medical care provider in attendance at all, and home birth, which is birth with a medical provider in attendance. There is a big difference. And women do, every day, women free birth, either because they want to and they're empowered to do that, or because they don't have any other choice. And oftentimes there aren't any issues that come about because of that. But for me, for safety in my own scenario, in my own situation, I prefer to have a midwife in attendance, and every woman should be entitled to have that option if that's what they want. It's ridiculous that some women have to birth at home alone because they can't afford it, but they're bloody well not going back to the hospital system for seconds again. It's just appalling that our system doesn't support women in their informed rights to birth with who and where they want to.
That's the work that you do.
That women-centered care model, that is what promotes safety. It gives, you know, higher rates of birth satisfaction. Women come out the other side feeling powerful and just ready to take on the world and ready to be mothers. And when you're sort of brutalized and demeaned before you even get to the point of mothering, because the birth is so traumatic and is not supported, that's a really difficult start to motherhood. And it's not fair that so many women, like 1/3 of women, are experiencing birth trauma in the Australian hospital system. Like, that is bullshit. I'm sorry, but no, that's not good enough. Like, we need to do better. We need to change things. And that's where my passion comes from. You know, I don't want every woman to have a home birth, but I want every woman to have the access and option if that's what they want.
Do you want to take us through to Hamish's pregnancy?
We started trying to conceive with Hamish when Willow was about maybe a year old. And it wasn't working. I couldn't conceive. And I had what is known as secondary infertility from the cesarean. But also, I think there was a little bit more going on there, because once we sort of started backing off on breastfeeding, I had mentioned to Willow, she was about 2. I said to her, look, if you want a baby brother or sister, I think I need to cut back on breastfeeding. Like, I think I'm not falling pregnant because of that. And I was trying everything. And she said, okay, I want a brother or sister. So she started cutting back on her feeds. She had less. And I conceived twice, and both times I miscarried in the very early weeks. And each time it was just as disappointing as the previous one. The first one I was like, oh, maybe this is just what happens. My mum had one miscarriage before each baby, so maybe that's what happens with me too. But the second one, I was like, oh, crap, like this again. So we just tried once more. It was like, we will try once more. We'll see how we go. And I had said to her, if we want to give it a real go, then you've got to stop feeding. You can't have Booby anymore. And she was like, yeah, fine.
So, and that was 2.5, did you say?
Yeah, she is very intuitive, and I don't quite know. She's an old soul. She's just amazing. So one of the stories of when all of this was happening, so I had said to Willow that we conceived the first baby. She was like, oh, super excited. And we showed her pictures of what the baby would have looked like at that stage in development and stuff. And she was very much a part of the journey. And then when I lost the baby, she was disappointed as well. But the children's understanding of miscarriage is just so beautiful, because it's just, you're not a failure. Like, you didn't do anything wrong. This just happens. Like, they just totally get it. And it was like, oh, okay. Yep, that's fine. It's just death. And then the second time I fell pregnant, she told me I was pregnant. And I was like, I'm not, darling. Like, there's no way I could be yet. And she was like, yeah, there's a baby in your belly. I was like, very soon there will be, very soon. Anyway, I took a test and I was pregnant. So somehow she knew, my little oracle child at 2.5 years old. We lost that baby, but she actually told me, this baby's sick. This baby isn't going to stay. When she said that, I was like, you know, in disbelief. No, it's going to be fine. And she was like, okay, but I think it's not going to stay. And she was right. So we lost that baby. And then the third time she told me I was pregnant. Again, I didn't believe her, but went and took a test, because this time, you know, she'd been right before. And lo and behold, I was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's incredible. I told her and she was like, yes, I know. And then I said, do you think this baby wants to stay? And she said, I don't know yet. I think so. Had a scan at 9 weeks with him as well, because I was really quite anxious. And my midwife ended up saying to me, look, if you're going to be so anxious about this, it's actually, your anxiety is probably doing more damage to your baby than having an ultrasound at this point would anyway. And because I was a little bit concerned about, you know, too many ultrasounds, don't want to expose them, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, we went and had a scan and he was kicking around in there and I knew that he was a boy. And Willow had named him Chicken Patty Cake. So that was the nickname.
For preparation for your VBAC, did you do anything differently?
When I was trying to conceive, I saw pretty much every health professional known to man, because I was sure there was something wrong with me and I just needed to fix it and then it would be okay and I would conceive a baby. So I had seen kinesiologists, chiropractors, naturopaths, dietitians, nutritionists, herbalists, Meyer abdominal massage therapists, like you name it, I had seen them. And after the second miscarriage, I actually just went, you know what, stuff this, like it's not working. If my body can't conceive a baby without all of this, then maybe I'm not meant to be pregnant again. And so I just abandoned it all besides chiro. That's because I actually have a fractured tailbone. So, or had when I was 12, I fractured my tailbone. And so I expected that it would be a bit of an issue during birth anyway. And so for Hamish's pregnancy, in terms of healthcare providers, I just had my midwife and my chiro was basically all I saw. I got rid of everything else. I was still taking supplements because I had done a lot of research into, you know, things that could help to prevent placental abruption. And so I was taking things that prevented blood clotting. You know, I wasn't taking aspirin or anything to that level, but just natural things that helped with that, but also just supported, you know, natural healthy function of, you know, the uterus and building of the placenta. I had been doing yoga in my previous pregnancy, but I didn't really have much time for it this time. And I changed my diet quite radically. So I've read about the Brewer's diet and, you know, how that can help to promote placental health and, you know, maintain the health of, you know, your pregnancy and optimum blood function and capacity and all of that sort of stuff. And I went, okay, this sounds like something that maybe I wasn't doing properly last time. So I started eating a lot more protein and basically protein loaded myself. And the reason I think that I had the bleed early on with Willow and then the abruption, I think the hematoma led to the abruption, but I think the hematoma came about because of, you know, inadequate blood flow and everything to do with that. Then with Hamish's pregnancy, I really focused on boosting my protein levels. And I did do more alignment stuff. I actually didn't do, I planned on doing spinning babies every night. I did it once, and that was the night before he was born.
Is it the forward-leaning inversion by any chance?
I did do the forward-leaning inversion. I did all of, like, just the routine. And then, interestingly, the night before Everly was born, I did the same thing because I was like, I'm sick of being pregnant with her. Mm. I was not comfortable. And so I did the spinning babies, and the next day I went into labor. So there you go. It works for me. But, his pregnancy was gorgeous. Like, it just was so beautiful. She was so connected. He was, just reeling around in there. And I absolutely adore being pregnant. I could do it every day of my life, you know, past the 12 weeks mark. And we got to 12 weeks, and then we got to 20 weeks, and then we got to 30 weeks, and it was just beautiful. And we did a little, like, belly cast, and Willow helped and drew on my belly. And I got to 36 weeks, which was when Willow was born. And, you know, still pregnant. And I was like, this is amazing. And then 37 weeks ticked around, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is actually happening this time. I had a mother's blessing, and it was just so nourishing and beautiful to be held by all of my friends and women that just really got what this was all about. And I had my belly decorated, and time just kept ticking on, and we got to 40 weeks on the day. And I remember saying to my husband, like, oh, this baby's going to be in for ages. And then 2 hours later, my waters broke. I, for some reason, had napped. I haven't napped in my entire life since, but I was having a nap on the couch, and all of a sudden felt this pop. And I was like, oh, I know what that is. Jumped up, ran to the kitchen. So it was like, you know, a hard surface, not my carpet or my lounge. And that just, like, the waters gushed everywhere. And I pulled my pants down and said, Jazz, it's clear and there's flecks of vernix in it. And I got super excited, and he was like, oh my gosh, do you want me to get you new pants? And I was like, look. And he's like, fine. I said, if you smell it. And he's like, I do not want to smell it. Just I'll go get you new pants. And then I rang my midwife and, you know, described it all to her, and was super elated and excited. And she was, you know, extremely happy for me. And we came up with the plan that, you know, I disinfect the toilet, nothing going inside the vagina, just wait and see what happens. If contractions don't pick up, you know, just be calm, don't have baths, you know, all of the usual stuff. And so I was like, well, we'll just get on with it and do what we normally do. So we went to the farmer's market, got the shopping, brought it home. I had planned on baking a chocolate cake with Willow while I was in labor and setting up my birth space. Like, in my mind, it was going to be like this luxurious, you know, easygoing. It'd take me hours because my mum was in labor with me for like 36 hours, and this is my first labor, right? And so I was like, oh, it'll be fine. But all of a sudden, when we got home, the contractions really picked up, and I was like, oh, okay, like, let's just set up the birth space. And so as we were setting up the birth space, I was, you know, rocking in between contractions, and my daughter was great. She was totally unfazed by it. Yeah, mummy's making funny noises. That's fine. I've already been prepared for it, so it was okay. We watched lots of birth videos and read lots of birthy books and spoke about, you know, mummy might sound like a cow. That's really normal. It's okay. Mummy's just working really hard to get the baby out. And at this point, she was 3.5. So she was totally fine with it. And yeah, so we just went about our day. And I ended up saying to my hubby at one point, oh, I'll message Jackie and just let her know that I'm, you know, contracting.
Jackie's your doula.
Yeah, our doula. Yeah. He was like, yeah, fine. That's fine. And then 4 contractions later, I'm rocking over this football, and I remember saying, I'm going to vomit every time I, like, rocked over the football. And I have a phobia of vomiting. So I was like, I need to stop, like, rocking, but I can't stop rocking. And I remember looking at him and being like, just call Jackie. And he was like, okay, fine. So she came over and sat with our daughter for a bit. And while he rang Jackie, he also rang Joe, my midwife, which was probably a good idea. And once Jo was on her way, I just went, okay, well, let's fill up the bath. And I am such a water lover. I actually got in the bath when it was like 1 centimeter full. And I would have looked ridiculous in there, like swaying away in a, you know, virtually empty bath. But it was just a really good, safe space for me. And I felt like everything I just dropped into another place at that point. I went into labor land, went to the stars to retrieve my baby, basically. And I remember seeing like Jackie come in and Willow come in and Joe come in at different times. And, you know, when Joe got there, I felt really calm and relaxed and relieved that, you know, okay, she's here. If anything, if I need her, she's here. And my daughter was just so involved. She was giving me drinks and massage, and oh, it was beautiful. Such a blissful labor. And then at some point, I started finding that it was quite hard. And I remember saying to my midwife, oh, this is taking a really long time. What's the time? And then I was like, actually, no, don't tell me. And then I looked out the window and I was like, oh, it's dark. Like, I've been doing this for a really long time. And in that time, like, I'd gotten out of the bath once and sort of rocked on my birth ball on our bed because I felt like it wasn't progressing fast enough. And my midwife was like, I think it's fine, but okay. Mm. And then I went and got back in the bath. And so it was pretty soon after I asked about the time that I started getting all of this like really downward pressure. And so for some reason, sitting or even squatting in the bath wasn't right, and I had to stand up. And so My hubby was standing there holding me, and I was swaying during the contractions, like standing up in the bath. I didn't have to be in the bath, but I would stand up for the contraction and then I'd sit back down and then I'd stand up again. It was just, yeah, where I felt comfortable.
Yeah.
And yeah, I could really feel like, oh, these contractions are doing something now. Like my body is opening, baby is moving down. Like I can, and then they got a little bit more intense and I ended up sort of putting my one leg up on the side of the bath through the contractions. And I could feel like something was shifting in my pelvis. Like there was movement happening. And then a little bit of blood dripped out. And my doula saw it and went and got my midwife, and she was like, oh, can we just check, given your history, like, let's just check where you're at. Because, you know, this is very normal if you're quite dilated. And so we don't want to get worried if it's nothing to worry about. And I was like, all right. So I agreed to a vaginal examination. She checked, and I remember thinking, like, she's going to say 4 centimeters. So just be prepared for that. And she checked and she was like, okay, do you want me to tell you? And I was like, no. And then she's like, all right, that's fine. And I was like, actually, yes. And then she's like, are you sure? Yes. And she goes, okay, you're 8 centimeters. And I was like, oh my gosh, really? Like, this is amazing.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, booyah. Like, I've got this. We're fine. We're really like pushing along now. So we went back in the bath, and pretty soon after that, I had like maybe 1 or 2 contractions where I was like, I can't do this anymore. Get the baby out. I have to go to the hospital. Get me an epidural. I even said, like, I just want to go home. And
you were home.
We're here. And, you know, they always had answers for everything. And I was like, no, like, just, I don't need your answers. You just need to fix this because it's actually too much for me now. And that was like all of 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden, I started getting really grunty towards the end of the contraction. So like the surge would come, it would peak, and then at the end as it was tapering off, I'd be like low moaning. And I was like, oh, okay, like this, maybe this is what the pushing sensation feels like. My midwife just sat there with a smile on her face and observed. And then progressively the pushing urge took over more of the contraction until the point where I was pushing throughout, or moaning, low moaning throughout the contraction. And I remember midway through a contraction, I was going, I'm pushing, Joe. And she's like, yep, I know. And so after about like maybe 3 or 4 pushes, I felt inside to see whether I could feel anything, because Joe had prompted me to do that. And I checked and I couldn't feel anything. And I remember wailing, oh my gosh, I'm going to be pushing for hours. And Joe was like, let's just do this one. Like, we're just going to focus on each contraction as it comes, and you can do this. Like, we're just going to keep going. And then like 3 contractions later, I checked and I could feel the baby's head. And then each contraction after that, I would check and tell her on my finger where it was, like, you know, now it's 2 knuckles away. Now it's 1 knuckle away, with this like huge glowing happy face. And I remember her commenting about how lucid I was and how present I was, like, you know, you're really quite lucid for this stage of labor. And I was just so ecstatic, like, oh my gosh, maybe this baby's actually going to come out of my vagina. Like, I don't think I really expected it until I could feel him in there, you know. Yeah, like a few more pushes and he started crowning, and I actually really loved the pushing stage because it felt like, you know, I'm doing something, like this is work, but it's achieving something, and I know that it's happening. And so, yeah, it was quite quick. So he crowned, and then I had like another contraction before his whole head came out. But while I was waiting for that contraction, I remember being like, oh my gosh, this is like the biggest I am ever going to be, and you are just taking your sweet time to actually come out. Like, this is really quite intense. My midwife was saying to me, you know, let's go ha, 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 ha. And so that's what we were doing as, you know, his head slowly emerged, and then pop, his head came out, and then, you know, next contraction, he swiveled. And my midwife tried to get his heartbeat while she was waiting for the rest of his body to come, and she couldn't find it. And I remember saying to her, relax, it's fine. I can feel him pulsing. And at the time, that made total sense to me. I don't know why, but, you know, I read back now and I'm like, I'm shocked that I wasn't more like freaking out. But at the time, I was like, no, he's pulsing. Like, I can feel it. He's fine. And then the rest of his body came out, and his cord was wrapped around his neck. He had a nuchal cord, and the pulsing that I could feel was his cord pulsing on my perineum. So that was really amazing. And then, you know, he came out, he took a little bit of time to come into his body. He was a little bit, I don't know, just, he was pretty cozy in there. And I only had a 15-minute second stage, so or pushing stage. So it was quite quick for him, I think. And yeah, he sort of bust his way on out of there. And then I was holding him, and Joe was just sort of like, you know, trying to wake him up a bit, and eventually he came good. He didn't require any oxygen or anything. He had a suction with the little bulb, and then he started screeching, and we were like, you know, absolutely in awe and so happy. And the placenta came away quite soon after. I mean, it was like 45 minutes because I didn't have the Syntocin and shot. I tend to bleed a lot. So I'm a bleeder is what I call myself. Mm-hmm. So during labor and birth, even when everything is absolutely perfect and I haven't torn and, you know, the placenta is coming away beautifully, I still bleed a lot. And so Joe was like, you know, if you're happy to, can we go into the bed so that I can just keep an eye on your bleeding? So I actually got out of the bath and birthed the placenta on the bed after he had had a bit of a feed. And his feed felt like razors. It was awful. It turns out he had a tongue tie, but at least he could latch. So that was something that we had had that, you know, we hadn't had with Willow. And I was like, I got to feel a contraction. So, you know, I was really over the moon and just, I couldn't wait to tell everyone, but at the same time wanted to keep it a secret for a little bit longer. It was really hard to decide what to do there. And Willow was just like beside herself. When he was born, she was yelling. I've got this little video that my doula took, and she's going, Joe, it's a baby, it's a baby. And like just jumping up and down. And oh, it was just so beautiful. Such a happy day and such a beautiful labor with him. Yeah, it was gorgeous.
Did you tear at all?
I did. He really did bust his way out of there. Despite my best efforts, ha ha haring, I did get to the end of that contraction and I went, fuck this, I'm just going to push. And I did. And yes, I got a delightful second degree tear because of my efforts. It was a bit touch and go. My midwife was like, oh, I don't know whether this is second or third degree tear until I've cleaned you up and had a good look. For a third degree, you actually don't need to, but the midwife would recommend that you transfer to hospital to get stitched up. And so I was like, please not third. And it wasn't, thankfully. But yeah, I did have a second degree tear, and I did later on, I found out many months after his birth that I had actually torn my pelvic floor off my pubic bone, got a really mild prolapse. So there was no pain related to that either before or after or during, but I think I just really went so gung-ho with pushing him out that I really needed to just take a step back and do it slowly. And my husband says, you were never going to do it slowly. You never do anything slowly. You're really impatient. So that's how it happened.
How did you discover that about your pelvic floor?
It was just pressure and heaviness until I got it checked out.
I wanted to ask you, did your midwife give you stitches for the second degree tear, or did she just say it's okay to let it heal, it's going to be all right?
So she recommended that I do get stitches for it. Second degree, she tends to err on the side of caution with that, but particularly with mine because it was a bad second degree, and she did a fantastic job.
Did you want to take us to Evelyn's birth now with Everly? Sorry.
Found out, well, first of all, I was sure that I couldn't fall pregnant while breastfeeding. So, you know, in my mind, my body just is really good at like lactational amenorrhea or whatever it's called, whereby you don't fall. Yes. Anyway.
Contraceptive.
Yes. So I was just happily going along feeding Hamish several times a day. And suddenly I started feeling really sick. My breasts were hurting again. Went and got my breast scan because I thought that I was getting a galactoseal, which is, you know, a breast cyst. By the time I actually got in to see the doctor for the scan, I knew I was pregnant anyway. And he was like, yeah, it's just your breast tissue, you know, your milk duct's expanding, ready for producing milk. So it's totally normal and fine. So she was a massive surprise.
Yeah.
My husband, meanwhile, is like, you told me you couldn't get pregnant while breastfeeding. I thought I couldn't. Oh, the nipple pain was horrendous. And that was just really bad. But again, my pregnancy was beautiful and blissful. I had the same midwife, had the same doula. This time, because it was the last, very last time I'd be doing it, I decided I wanted to get a birth photographer on board as well. I was just very immersed and just really loved every moment of growing that little baby and feeling her tumble inside, and really tried to treasure it and remember, you know, this is how it feels because I'm not doing this again.
Mm. I forgot to ask you as well about uterine rupture. Was that something, I think this is, I guess, going back to even Hamish's pregnancy. Were you ever concerned about that?
Yeah. So in the first, you know, when I first had Willow actually and was considering what would I do for a future baby, I did a buttload of research. Like I was reading all the time, all of the statistics. What does it mean? What are the chances of this placental abruption happening again? And what are the risks associated with VBAC? And actually, they're very similar. The risk of a placental abruption in a first pregnancy is around 1%. And the risk of a uterine rupture after a cesarean is around 1%. I had already fallen into the sort of, I was the statistic with a placental abruption. It's unlikely to happen. It happened to me. So I really did have to consider how I felt about this. But what I got to in the end was, I wasn't scared of placental abruption during my first pregnancy. I also wasn't scared of cord prolapse, and that's a 1% chance of happening too. So then why would I be so scared of uterine rupture after a cesarean if it's the same chances that I would have had of those other two things happening in a first pregnancy and labour? And then the other aspect, my doctor, my GP is amazing. And I spoke to him about placental abruption because I was really worried it would happen again. And indeed, my husband was too. He was worried about losing me and being a sole parent to two little ones if something like that happened. But the way my doctor phrased it has always stuck with me. And he basically said, you have a 1% chance of that happening. That's a 99% chance that it won't. And he's like, they're really bloody good odds. And, you know, for a subsequent pregnancy after placental abruption, the risks do increase to somewhere between sort of 3 and 11%, depending on which studies you look at. But given that my risk of placental abruption was three times higher than my risk of uterine rupture, rupture actually wasn't the thing that factored into my mind at all. I did get worried about abrupting, but I did just keep telling myself that the likelihood of that happening, particularly given I had done everything I could to prevent it, I'd had all the tests of blood clotting disorders and things like that, and nothing had come back positive for those. So I knew I was doing everything I could. It was highly unlikely it would happen again, and it didn't. And, you know, then for my third bub, for Everly, it didn't even cross my mind. I also, my beautiful friend Erin, who you've had on the podcast actually, I remember her saying to me, because I said, I can't get rid of the fear, like I'm still scared that something is going to go wrong. And she said, you need to concentrate on your hopes rather than your fears. And she said, I know that I was fearful during my pregnancy and I gave birth anyway. And that sort of sat with me for a long time as well, that, you know, you can be fearful and still give birth. You don't have to eliminate every little ounce of doubt or fear in your body. Got to 40 weeks. I was very heavy and low, and I felt like the baby's head was basically at my kneecaps. And I remember saying, I cannot do this much longer. So I ended up like setting up my birth space, and I'm like, just come. And I had said, our babies are all born on the dates that are our favorite numbers. So like my husband really loves the number 13 and our son Hamish was born on the 13th of November. I really love the number 7 and 3. So my daughter is born on the 7th of August. And so I had said, I reckon this baby is going to be born on the 3rd. And it just so happened it was the morning after a new moon. And yeah, so I woke up that morning at around 3 a.m. with contractions. And I was rocking over the pillows in bed and moaning, and my hubby looked at me and was like, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm getting contractions. And he's like, oh, okay. I went back to sleep. So I was like, well, I'm just going to get up because you're a bit useless right now. So I got up, I took a selfie of my, like, my last belly selfie, sort of went and sat in my birth space and just really tried to revel in the beauty of this. But I was really struggling. Like this was not the same experience as what I'd had with Hamish. And also I didn't know quite as much about birth when I was birthing Hamish. This time I had watched women labor. I had watched them birth. I knew what the normal stages of labor looked like and sounded like and felt like. And so I was like, you know, this is where I should be at by now. And it wasn't happening. And I, you know, just sent a message to my midwife and my doula and my photographer and let them know. And I had a chiropractic appointment booked for that day. And so I had said to Jazz, look, I just really want to go and have the adjustment all the same. And he was like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I'm only getting contractions every 5 minutes. It's fine. So we drove to the chiro.
Wait a minute. You're getting contractions every 5 minutes?
Yeah. And I was like, it's fine. It's not the real deal yet. It's just starting. And so we went. And I remember when I got to the chiropractor, the receptionist was like, why are you here? I was like, because I'm just getting my adjustment. And she's like, okay, I'm just going to put you in a separate room while you wait for him, okay? And I was like, yep, that's fine. Cool. Other people there would have been like, what the heck is going on? And I had my whole tribe there, like all of my many children. So it was just, yeah. Anyway, he adjusted me. And after the adjustment, he did some pelvic adjustment stuff. And I felt something just change. And from that moment, the contractions were coming every 3 minutes and lasting for about 45 seconds. And I said to Jazz, oh, we'll just walk around a bit, give the baby some time to just like settle in and my bones to sort of settle in before I go into a seated position in the car. And I think I lasted about 2 minutes of that and then was like, we've got to go home. Jumped in the car, stopped about 43 times on the way home so I could get out and rock and moan and groan on the side of the road. While my husband looked at me and was like, exactly why are we not at home when you're planning a home birth? Like, this is ridiculous. Once this ramped up again and we got home, I rang Jo and I spoke to her through a contraction. She's like, I think it would be sensible if I came up. And I was like, yeah, okay, no worries. So she came up and she called my photographer to come as well after checking that it was okay. And I asked for my doula to come. And so I was really overanalyzing every single moment of it. During the morning of labor, every time I looked at the clock, it was repeated numbers. So like 3:33, 4:44, 5:55. And my midwife arrived at 11:11, which is a very auspicious time. And I had a student midwife coming along with us as well. Her name was Tash. And so they arrived and checked me over and everything was looking great. And then I said, I'm just going to go in the back room. I'll just keep myself in there and you guys just be out here and I'll just try and get this thing moving. And I just felt like it was an uphill battle and I wasn't actually managing to progress anywhere. In reality, everything was beautifully normal, but in my head, I just had this expectation of what it would look like and feel like and sound like by now. And I was impatient for it to just hurry up. And I just wasn't in the headspace that I needed to be in. It felt like hours and hours went past. The kids were playing beautifully. They were making birthday cake and like little molds of our family out of Play-Doh. And I had, you know, tried to go to the toilet and thought that I wasn't able to, and that my bladder is holding the baby up. Again, very clinical minded rather than just being in my body. And my midwife was saying, just, you need to get out of your head. And I remember saying really bitterly to her, and how do you expect I do that? Mm. And, you know, how do you suggest I do that, actually? And I wasn't listening for an answer, of course. I just had to be snarky. and so, yeah, we just kept going. And then at some point I said, look, can you put a catheter in? I just need my bladder drained because I'm pretty sure it's holding the baby up. They were like, okay, like how long is it since you weed? And I said, not since 9 o'clock this morning. And at this point, it would have been about 4 p.m. And so it had been going on for a while, and I had felt like I'd been in transition for like 2 hours at that point. Like I knew when I had sort of dropped into that zone, because I was moaning and crying and not able to cope anymore and just saying, no, 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 like I don't want to do it anymore. And my photographer actually was the one that came and sat with me, and she was like, we're going to turn it to a yes. And she sort of coached me through it. So I was saying, yes, no, 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 yes, no, 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 like throughout each contraction. We got to the point where, you know, I seemed to really drop into it, but then I came back out. And, yeah, I said to Joe, just can you do a catheter and just see if there's anything in my bladder that needs to come out? And she was like, okay, well, since you haven't weed for that long, like maybe it's worth trying. So she tried and nothing came out, because actually I had sweated all of that fluid that I'd been drinking out just by, you know, laboring and being in the birth pool. And then in the end, I was like, you need to break my waters. Like this baby isn't coming out and I'm really suffering. Like I can't do this anymore. I know that you can make it happen. And she said, well, why don't you have a few more contractions and see if you can break your waters? See if you can like go and push on the toilet and see if you can pop them. And we tried all of these things and nothing was working anyway. So they ended up agreeing to do it, because I was just at a point where like I was falling asleep between contractions and had been for an hour or so at that point. And at this point, my second midwife was there too. So I had Jackie and Joe and Tash and my photographer and Jackie, my doula, and the kids and Justin. So
wow. who was sort of looking after the kids? Like, was that the role of your doula to kind of help with supporting you in that respect?
Yes. And they really adore her. So they were having a great time and playing and baking and doing all the things. And nice. We had music going in the background and everything. I had gotten on the lounge and asked them, you know, can you break my waters? And they did that. And then it felt like everything shifted gear finally. And I was like, okay, so this is happening. Good. They took the catheter out and I was just like, you know, moaning through these contractions. And it felt like I was really like starting to get somewhere. And then I was like, I want to get back in the pool. Can I get back in the pool? Joe was like, yeah, okay, would you be okay if I check how far dilated you are before you jump in, just so that we can, you know, work out what's happening? We don't want you to get back in the pool before this has really kicked in, like breaking my waters has actually achieved what it needed to. And she had checked me before she broke my waters. I think I was about 8 centimeters at that point. So she checked again and I was 9, almost fully, but I had this like little lip of cervix that was stuck over the baby's head. She said, I know that you know what this means, but we're just going to try and do some like forward leaning, do horse lips, see if we can take the pressure off the cervix so that it can dilate for you. And I was like, can't you just move it? Like I've seen health professionals just move it out of the way. Can't you do that? And she said, look, let's just give you some time to do it and see how you go. And I was like, all right, so here I am doing horse lips, like head buried in the pillows, screaming in between. And yeah, just really trying not to push, because I just really wanted to push. And then she checked again. It was still there. And I was like, just move it. Mm-hmm. And she tried during one contraction and it just wasn't budging. And she was like, let's just do a little bit more horse lips, head down, bum up, just keep going. We're going to get there. We're right here with you. And then all of a sudden, I could feel the baby, even though my bum is in the air, I could feel the baby drop. And I just looked at Joe. My recollection is that I looked at Joe and said, I'm getting in the pool. But her recollection, which is written down, and what my husband remembers, is she said, maybe it's time to get in the pool. And so I just got up, got in the pool, and then literally the next contraction, I birthed her head. So her whole head came out all in one contraction, and I breathed her out. I didn't push. And I'd been very conscious of telling myself that's how I was going to birth this baby, so I didn't bust myself open again. And so I just breathed and breathed and breathed. And I felt her come down and out, and I was holding her head. And actually, I don't think anyone realized how close baby was. My midwife said, is that the baby's head, Amy? And during the contraction, I'm going, yep. And then she goes, Rue, get in here, who was my photographer. And so she's come running in and started snapping. And yeah, so baby's head emerged, and it was such an incredible experience to actually feel with my hand as she emerged out of me, like she's between worlds. And so I was feeling her and rubbing her head and got that break between the contractions. And I was like, oh, Jess, I can feel her head, like she's here. And then she rotated and her shoulders came out, and I could feel it all. Like I could feel that she rotated and almost like swam out and out between my legs. And I scooped her up and brought her to my chest. And that's the first baby I had ever caught all by myself. And that was my plan. And so I brought her to my chest and gazed at her and was just, you know, totally in awe and felt incredible and got that massive rush of oxytocin. I'm so in love with everybody in this room. And, you know, it was just absolute magic. And the kids watched on and they were saying, can we touch her? And she still hadn't quite come into her body yet. And so, you know, we were trying to get her to come good, and Joe gave her a little bit of bagged air. And meanwhile, I was like, I'm pretty sure she's okay. And if you look back through the photos, I'm actually holding on to her cord and feeling it pulse. I could feel her heart pumping and her cord pulsing. And so I was pretty sure she was all right, but it was just a matter of, you know, getting her to come good. So she had the suctioning like Hamish. And again, that was a very fast entrance. And then we all just sort of sat back and reveled in the beauty of this baby. And I had some more contractions and the placenta wasn't coming, and I tried to sort of do some gentle traction to pull it out myself, but it wasn't working in the pool. So I ended up saying to my midwife, I'm like, you're worried about the blood this time again, are you? And she's like, yeah, I think maybe let's just try and birth the placenta on the lounge. And so we got out of the pool and got onto the lounge, and I fed Bub there, and eventually the placenta came out again, needed a little bit of traction again. We got some pictures of Bub attached to the placenta, and with Hamish's placenta, I had forgotten all about doing that, and so was really sad that I didn't have that. But we had done cord burning with him, and it was actually beautiful, but it took a really, really long time. And then I ended up needing to tie it as well because he kept bleeding, like it didn't seal entirely. So this time I opted just to do the cord tie just for simplicity's sake, and Willow cut Bub's cord. Yeah, it was just so beautiful. And then we had birthday cake and sang happy birthday to the baby. And yeah, aww, it was just,
that's lovely.
It was just gorgeous. Yeah, she was just the perfect little addition to our family. And yeah, my midwife stayed around for a little bit longer, and then they headed home and we all tucked up into bed, and the kids were going absolutely bonkers. Like, she was born at 5:30-ish in the afternoon, and they were just so excited. They were still roaring around the house at 9 o'clock. At some point I was like, okay, time to jump into bed, and you guys just lie in bed with me. And they fell asleep, and then Jazz transferred them. But yeah, this time birthing in that way, I did not tear. I barely had a graze. Like, I don't even think I had that. It was amazing. I did not feel like I had given birth at all. Besides, I had like a little bit of a jiggly tummy and a new baby to show for it. My perineum was amazing. I could sit down, I could run around, I felt like I was going to be fine. And yeah, I just felt incredible. Yeah, it was a really beautiful experience, but very hard and very different to my second labor and birth.
Your midwife was checking the baby's heartbeat with a Doppler every so often?
Yeah, so she always, throughout labor, she's constantly checking with the Doppler just to see that baby's heart rate is is going well and checks my blood pressure and stuff as well throughout. And having that intermittent monitoring, like it's a really nice way of knowing that everything's going okay, baby's doing really well, but not being strapped down to anything or forced to be restricted in the way that you can move, or, you know, having the damn monitor not work for some unknown reason and then you have to lie on your back so they can get a good trace, all of that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's just as safe, in fact safer than continuous monitoring when you consider the interventions that come with that monitoring. So yeah, Doppler, it's amazing. It's been really, really good for during my two labours and births at home.
I just have one last question. Did you experience any symptoms with prolapse this time?
Interestingly, the prolapse got better after Everly was born. My theory is that the combination of not pushing during birthing Ev, I just breathed her out. I think I didn't put as much strain on my pelvic floor as I had during Hamish's birth, and also the nerve damage healing over the time, and all of the tightening hormones that get surged throughout your body post-birth had helped to bring that prolapse back up to better than it ever had been after Hamish.
A beautiful journey, Amy.
Yeah, it's been a very special one. I'm very grateful that I've had it. And I think, you know, I really, my first birth, a lot of people are like, oh, that would have been really disappointing and awful. But I think I learned the things that I needed to learn from Willow's birth. And that has helped me throughout, you know, my doulaing and my motherhood journey and my subsequent pregnancies and births, because, you know, I was really very quite egotistical, I suppose, or a little bit cocky about, you know, I've done everything right, so I'm going to have an incredible birth. And the fact that I didn't, despite that, was very humbling. And now I will never look at someone and say, well, if you just want it a lot, then it will happen. Like, I understand that's not the way it works. And there are no fail safes in birth. You get what you're given sometimes, and the babies have different plans. So yeah, it's been a beautiful journey, and I'm so grateful for it.
Just wanted to thank you, Amy, for coming on the show to share your stories with us, and also thank you for the work that you do in the birth sphere and as a breastfeeding counselor as well. You devote your time to helping these mothers in achieving their goals. So yeah, just wanted to say thank you so much as well.
No, it's my absolute pleasure. It's my passion. It doesn't feel like work at all. And thank you so much as well, because, you know, releasing these sorts of stories and sharing these sorts of stories is exactly how we revolutionize birth and the maternity care system, because women become informed and empowered and they start asking for the care that they deserve. And yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode. If you would like to connect with Amy, you can do so by searching for Birth Ames on Facebook or Instagram. We've popped her details in the show notes for your reference. Amy is located in the Blue Mountains in Sydney and is taking on doula clients, so please feel free to reach out to her. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Thank you for listening to this VBAC story. If you like the show, please subscribe and feel free to leave a review. If you would like to connect with us on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for VBAC Birth Stories. If you have a question or you'd like to express interest in sharing your personal story, email us at vbacbirthstories@gmail.com. VBAC Birth Stories is a podcast where we share women's lived experiences. Please be advised that it's not intended to replace medical advice. If you have any concerns at all during your pregnancy, please always speak to your healthcare provider.